Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into season 3, House of the Dragon, episode 3. What's the title, Matt? It said episode 3 when I watched it.
It is, I just had it pulled up here. I think it's like the Rat Feast or something like that.
Yeah, if I remember correctly,
the Rat Banquet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We did it. What do you think of the rats making a little comeback, huh?
We'll talk about it here in a second, but I was texting you as I was watching it, but we didn't do the live show last night, and we're probably not going to be doing one for at least maybe until the finale, because it's just the time. I feel bad, but it's too hard.
It is. You have to get up early.
The bigger problem is that it's also baby bedtime. And so It is quite difficult for me to watch the show to where I can like take notes and actually absorb it and then do baby bedtime really quick, mm-hmm. which involves reading Clifford or Bluey. And then, you know, it's like try to watch the thing, have an actual reaction, then go read something totally different, which is great. But Clifford and Bluey are freaking great, by the way. And then come back to it. And I felt like my reactions and my thoughts about it were, you know, sort of thrown off by, you know, the fact that Clifford is causing a lot of mayhem, getting in a lot of trouble. Okay.
Are you saying you like Clifford more?
He makes a lot of messes. Okay. And so it's just tough.
Oh, I love that so much. I think everyone can forgive you for wanting to put the baby down.
I don't know. We'll see in the iTunes reviews.
You know what? I agree. Grow up, Matt. Grow up.
Yeah, seriously. Anyway, I like this more too, because then I also get to review it, sit on it, and then I just got to come in here. We get to have our little, how's it going? And it's just like a normal episode too. So how are you doing today, Jamie?
Oh, I'm good, man. I had a horrific day at work, but I'd rather be here doing what we're doing right now. So I'm trying to put it behind me. I'm trying to celebrate what I thought was a great episode of House of the Dragon, and kind of excited. I don't know, man. I always like hearing you speculate on what's next. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Tumbleton is coming right around the corner, but I'm kind of curious now. Has your predictions changed? We can get into it at the end of the episode, right, of course. But yeah, I'm all right, man. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good. I think I have a little bit of a cold coming. Man, it's the weather getting me.
Yeah, I can hear it.
Well, and July 4th, man. The older I get, the less I seem to like my neighbors lighting off fireworks. I'm all for it. Like, I'm all for everyone having the freedom to go light fireworks. As my phone goes off here.
That was your neighbor. They heard you.
No, it was my dad, actually. He'll call me back. But it's all about, you know, it's my dog struggles with it. And I just don't think, I think lighting fireworks off until like 2 a.m. that's a little egregious.
Some would say that's freedom, man.
Well.
what is the cost of freedom?
I don't know, man.
Cheddar's eardrums.
Right. Yeah, it's just a bit much. I don't know if there's a happy medium, like maybe you just we can all light up fireworks from like 7 to 10 or something, and then that outside of that is, but they're actually super illegal here in Oregon, so
I feel like they're illegal in a lot of places and they still have them.
I think it's just impossible to police.
I wasn't I'm really close to a venue that does fireworks, but I was lucky enough, I don't remember hearing. I also was not sober, so maybe that helped.
There you go.
I did come in second in the July 4th golf scramble at my golf club. Pretty exciting. Hey. Came in 9 under with the handicap. We came in 18 under, dude.
Nice.
Mrs. Nuts hit a 60-foot eagle putt on hole 2. It was insane.
Okay.
Yeah. Good stuff. Very excited.
What you have to explain golf to me, because I don't understand the scoring.
Well, I don't know if everyone wants to hear me explain golf, but so essentially... You know, if a par 5, you're supposed to make the ball in the hole in 5, right?
Correct.
So if you hit it in 2, it's an albatross, which is very rare.
Sure.
Then you have an eagle, birdie, par, right? Mm-hmm. So we got an eagle, but there's like a handicap
rating. That's pretty patriotic for July 4th.
Well, we did it on purpose. I told Kelsey, I said, you're getting deported if you don't actually hit this putt. I'm just kidding, though. Who knows? Right. It was awesome. But because of the handicap system, there are certain holes you get an extra stroke on because of your handicap level. And on that hole, we got a stroke. So it was actually counted as an albatross.
Yeah.
And it skipped us from third to second place. I mean, absolutely clutch behavior.
Yeah. It's
incredible.
Hey, that's great, really, man. Good.
Yeah,
that's great. I worked the day. We get paid double time and a half, and then I worked the next day. And I work at 4 a.m. So yesterday I was dead. It was like 6 o'clock. I'm like, I'm going to bed like now. as soon as the baby went down, boom, I went down.
So did you watch the episode? Yeah, you watched it last night. This morning.
I didn't even watch it last night. I watched it this morning, which is why I texted you when I was reading it, and I was about halfway through the episode, and I was like, which we'll get started on here. I was like, man, I don't know how I feel about this episode.
And yeah, then, what's up? What's going on with this? Because pissed me off immediately.
And then Rhaenyra fed them the rats, and I was like, all right,
dude, scene.
I was like, this episode's peak. Okay.
Yeah, back. Dude, I want to say, I think, like, reviewing back on the episode, I was thinking about it. I think that's going to go as one of the more underrated scenes, I feel.
Oh, for sure.
Especially, like, just comparing it to her father, right? Doing a beautiful, like, banquet dinner, trying to put the families together. And now it's her turn to serve somebody dinner, and she serves them rat. Like, just felt good. Mm-hmm. Like, good to see the one percenters eat rats. Fantastic.
Yeah. I love that scene, but we'll dive into the episode just as a whole here. Man, what a weird episode. And I mean that in like the best ways possible, because this was described as the introspective Rhaenyra episode. Like the whole episode is her almost. I mean, except for the opening with Daemon. I mean, this is almost entirely her episode. She is in like almost every frame of this, which is not something we have seen in even Duncan Egg. There are scenes where it was just Egg. So that was like a very cool, interesting, different way to do it. I loved just the fact that we got so much of her and to see her struggling and everything that's going on. And it's pure chaos of dealing with all of the house chores and everything. Yeah. At first, like when she saw the hallucination of Jace, I was like, oh man, is this going to be like
episode?
And I was like, man, I don't know how I feel about this entirely. And then once we sort of hit the rats and everything else kind of got going, I was like, all right, okay. I think, yeah, I get it now. Like the whole episode kind of finally clicked. And I do think the second half of the episode was much stronger than the first episode, the first half. I've seen a lot of people giving this like 9s out of 10s. I feel this for me is more like an 8, 4 out of 5 stars.
This is where I might be off with whatever the opinions are of other people. I thought this episode was phenomenal, dude. Like, I thought this was, some people have questioned the writing of House of the Dragon, which is fair. There's been some stuff that hasn't been so great. There's been some stuff that's amazing. I personally felt like the entire episode was driven by dialogue, by facial acting, and from the script to the performances to the music. I just thought it all kind of came together. And the fact that it doesn't, I mean, I haven't really seen the online reactions, but I haven't seen anyone sending me things being like, this is the worst episode of all time. It's actually a little bit encouraging to me that like people can have an episode that's just character-driven dialogue and it not become, you know, this show's fallen off or whatever it might be. Cause me and you both have said a lot of people have come in from late seasons, Game of Thrones. They just expect blockbuster stuff each and every week. And that's not how that works. That's not how show pacing works. And for an episode that was a little quieter, a little slower, a little more claustrophobic, dare I say, I thought the pacing was really good. I really enjoyed my time with this one. This 3-episode stretch is definitely the best the show has had so far, I think.
Yes.
It's strong.
I would agree. And somebody had sent Matthew Perry, shout out.
Our boy.
Our little group text. He said, how do you guys feel about this? Had this been the opener? I think this would have been fine as the opener.
Because, huge tone setter, yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge tone setter. It's pure chaos, but in like this is supposed to be the breather episode, but I think it also just shows you where we're at in the story here that, man, if this is the breather episode, that's it's just pure straight downhill. I mean, from here, both thematically and also just the pacing of it. It's just a downhill ride at this point.
Yeah, and we've been saying that, right? We said, well, everyone might have been sus on season two, but we promise you season three has the potential to be insane.
Right. Outside, I mean, this might also be the most jam-packed episode. Every small moment is huge.
Little things.
Even stuff like Bela, her one shot and just nobody talking to her or anything. And that's it. But it's a super powerful scene. Everything like Damon hearing that Simon Strong has died and like just his
just a second
of standing up. Helena talking about how she doesn't want to stay in the room, which might play into something later. We can save that for the end. I mean, just absolutely jam-packed every single moment of this. Ulf Targaryen.
Some great comedic relief in this episode.
The look on their faces, like, are you serious? Like,
I love it.
Like,
love
we're not that. Even we're not even going to name him Adam Valerian. There ain't no way you're going about to be Ulf Targaryen.
Because Target, absolutely not. Yeah. Hugh the Hammer, we get his name. Kelsey was like, I like him, and I was like, yeah, me too. Hugh the Hammer's legendary. Good comedic relief, by the way. I actually thought that was laugh out loud. I was laughing like audibly. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, like you said, there's a lot of little things in this episode, and I'm trying to kind of go chronologically, but it's going to be hard not to just kind of jump to the big moments.
No, it's a huge episode because it's your normal length episode. I think it was maybe a little bit longer. It's like 58 minutes, but like obviously some of that's credits, so I do feel like maybe it was just slightly longer. But I mean, it was just like ridiculously jam-packed with scenes like her getting ready, right? And then she gets on the throne and like everything has gone wrong, right? And I mean, everyone's coming to her asking her to do this and this and this, and finding out there's no gold, there's no treasury. And then of course, I mean, that doesn't even get to you haven't even got to the fact that there's like a fake Darren and
everything that has with the
implications of that. And
that was a big moment for me, by the way.
And I will say, Ormond Hightower, his armor, by the way, I mean, first of all, he's a freaking green, so get out of here. But his armor, it's pretty sick. I mean, I saw the screenshots this week from a couple images from the episode. I mean, dude, it's awesome. Like, it's so incredible. Intricately detailed and everything.
That's the thing. When I went to the Game of Thrones studio last month, I just could not believe the level of detail for like one shot costumes. It was just insane.
And that's something we talked about going into season one, like especially comparing it to like, and I'm gonna go super deep into this, but it was one of the things we talked about, like the difference of this and Game of Thrones, like House of the Dragon and like some of the other shows that were coming out, like Rings of Power, Witcher, right? Like a big, and this isn't really to like, talk bad about those shows. But the big difference is we looked it up and a lot of the same costume designers and a lot of the same set people were people who have worked all the way on Game of Thrones and then came to this show. And it's like, well, now that person has been working in Westeros TV for 10 years. So cool, by the time, so all of the costuming and armor and stuff, they have like, they're masters of it, and they're not coming to a new IP or how do we want to get this? They already know what the world looks like because they've been doing it for 10 years. Like that is sort of the advantage that Game of Thrones has. And I think it's the same thing with even though story-wise, a lot of people, including myself, did not like the Star Wars sequels, but it's just an advantage that franchise has because it's been around for so long and so many people have worked on it that have worked on it for decades where like they still looked like amazing.
Oh, they were a spectacle.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's just one of the things that this show has going for it.
Yeah, it's a leg up. I mean, I guess as long as you like the costuming and such. I thought it was great. There has been, I will say this, there have been a couple of the small folk costumes that I think look a little too almost modern. Mm-hmm. This is a nitpick for sure. I noticed it this episode. There was just a couple people that I was like, why are they wearing? And it, maybe it is accurate for the time period, you know, that they're trying to emulate from history. It just looked a little modern to me. I might be completely off, and it's not a big deal. It did not hurt me and detract from the episode at all. I want to get back to what you were saying about how everything's falling apart, and you realize that the realm is in a very bad state, probably because they've been at war, right? Like they haven't been able to do the housekeeping stuff, but the anxiety and the monotony of this episode is exactly what I love to see in shows that feature some sort of royalty and running of a kingdom. And I think that this is very in line with George R. Martin's complaint about Lord of the Rings. Like, yeah, we have a new king, but how does he rule after? Happily ever after, but how does he do taxes? How does he build roads? And funny enough, that is actually covered in Fire and Blood, right? We know.
Yeah.
We know that Rhaenyra's grandfather actually did build most of the roads, which is really cool. You don't hear a lot about infrastructure in fantasy shows. You don't hear a lot about debt, right? Like the realm's debt. It's one of the things I really like about the Iron Bank and the Game of Thrones, which I think the show really doesn't do much with. And I think the books, it could be a massive piece of the puzzle, especially when it comes to who gets put on the Iron Throne. So I always like monetary struggle or anxiety in shows. Maybe it's because I grew up broke. And I know what that feels like. But this whole episode, even outside of that, there was a sense of anxiety across it all. And I like that Rhaenyra has flashes of strength, like feeding the rats, right, to the nobles. And she's making decisions. She is struggling. She is reluctant at points. She is confused, seeking counsel. But you also have to just look around her and realize that there's no safety net here. Daemon is a complete wild card, and Corlys calling out the bastards. I was almost like, you know, oh my god.
He's right though.
He's not wrong. Technically speaking,
I mean, they're both right.
Right.
Is the thing. And you know what I think could actually come back and be a player? The fact that I'm blanking on his name. Laenor is still alive.
So we said last week we didn't think it's coming. So do you think maybe that does have a piece?
Maybe he will find out, and I don't want to go into any spoiler territory. But obviously we can talk about that maybe at the end, but I mean it could come back up. We'll see.
I think Corlys, as far as like arcs go, has really excelled since the first episode of this season and made season two a lot more worth it. Like, I'm invested in his family.
Right. Yeah, and seeing when she names him Adam of Hall and like the look on his face, because again, this is one of those things where you get to play with it a lot more than the book. And you can say, well, this isn't George's story, whatever, but regardless, I mean, they are doing a great job of adapting this and making all of these just bullet points that you get in the books feel genuinely connected. Like, because this is totally different than Game of Thrones and A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, where it's all first person point of view perspective. I mean, like, this is what, you know, we said this a couple weeks ago. You're telling a story that says, well, Maesters say this and Mushroom, like who represents more of the small folk, say this. So a lot of these things, you know, happen, but you have to take a lot of stuff with grain of salt. Like, I mean, yes, there are some things that obviously they have not brought into the books that, like, some people pointed out and, you know, and added to some of the comments you're saying. We're like, well, okay. I mean, it's pretty obvious that, like, yes, this person obviously existed they haven't chosen to include them. But at the same time, where you talk about, like, well, you know, like even stuff like the blockade, like, remember they sent food in from the blockade and stuff. It's like, well, on one hand, it's like, they are also the ones enacting the blockade, right? But the small folk may not perceive it that way. So I do think they're doing a very good job of navigating that.
Yeah, I'm not, and this sounds bad as a book reader, I don't really care what they cut and keep from this show as much as I did in Game of Thrones because of the fact that it's an interpreted history. But also, I think as more adaptations have come out of like pieces of literature that I love, like books and whatever, right? I just don't care that much as long as I think the story is good. Like Daron, I know people are like, you know, Daron. I forgot he was in Fire and Blood. Like, I don't think he's that big of a contributor personally. I don't know. Maybe that's
right.
Maybe that isn't something people would agree with.
But they've also done stuff to connect it to the main series, which is what really sets me up, because George, even in his writings, does things that, while they may not necessarily connect to White Walkers and Azor Ahai and all of these things, mm-hmm. it still often shows that like history repeats itself, and a lot of these things you happen again in later in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yes, and also I think there's a lot of lessons that are going to be here that were in Game of Thrones, and I think that is that the crown is heavy on the head that it rests, mm-hmm. and power usually corrupts in some manner. I thought Alicent's little speech about you'll do things that kill you inside, mm-hmm. I thought that little speech was really good. Got to give it up to Alicent in this episode. The facial acting when she sees Daron. Is it Daron or Daron? What are we going with? I don't really care.
I think it's Daron.
Okay, we're going Daron then. So
like
when
Daron,
she sees
the great, and I think they're all Daron. Okay. Yeah,
I'm just making sure because I've heard it like three different ways, and my dyslexia cannot. I can't handle it. So I thought her facial acting there was incredible. The boy who's playing that role, fantastic,
crushed it.
Yeah, that was maybe my favorite part of the episode. It was either that or the rat dinner. Those are probably the two things that I really enjoyed the most.
I'll tell you what got me going was the Septon coming in and saying, "Oh, I can't do that."
Oh, it pissed me off.
I was like, "Well, Maegor the Cruel had an awful lot to say about it." Okay, I think.
Well, you know, the religion has been so adopted that I do think it's almost like a little bit of a Pope situation going on here, right? Like that's mm-hmm. kind of what we're basing it off of, I think. But also like Maegor and the Pope, like, could you relate that to Henry VIII potentially? I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that George pulls on from history, which is really cool. But here's a question. And I wanted to ask you about this because I think it's intentional and it does piss me off, but I think I'm supposed to be pissed off about it. Do you feel like people get away with way too much like sassiness towards Rhaenyra?
I think it's hard because she has just been put in the queen position, like where she's like officially like, you know, queen
and emotionally broken from losing her son,
right? And there's also like there's not nearly enough like law and order set up yet for that to happen. I mean, Daemon called it out last week. It's like, did you hear frailty in the queen's voice?
Yeah, and I did like that because I think it shows a difference between Rhaenyra and Daemon in the way that they're trying to, you know, do their authority. And Daemon, by the way, just going on a complete like purity of race, like family blood thing. Like, we're going to conquer the world. And they mentioned the wingmen in Yeeti.
That's that whole scene talking in High Valyria and everything. We're like, where are they supposed to be gods and all of these things? Yeah,
I love it.
It was so cool.
Yeah, any mention of the extended world
through a little bit here just to make sure we don't miss anything. But man, there's so much, even small details in this, like when she goes and she looks at the fake Daron and she sees, she's thinking about killing him, and she like picks up the carving that he's doing because he's just a young boy. And there's a lot of memes right now being like, hold on, you're telling me there's like I could have dyed my son's hair? Yeah, you know, it saves us a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and there was a moment where I was like, is she actually gonna do this? Like, is this the descent into darkness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's so many of these scenes also back to back. Like, so here at about like the 47 minute mark is when she is talking to the small folk, like towards the end, right? Mm-hmm. Now she's already had this conversation with Alicent, and so she's talking to the small folk and talking about like, this is what my father would have done. And she's giving them food after she's just ransacked the high lords. All right. And she's going to give food to the poor people. So now you have pissed off the high lords and you have the small folk back on your side a little bit. Remember, they're going to go back and forth quite a lot.
It's temporary. And that was a good point. Like, right. It's a Band-Aid. It's not a solution.
And then she immediately, as she's like walking in from that, she's stopped by Corlys, who says, hey, are we going to get this name thing going? And he says, no. And he's like, all right, well, F you. Right. And then back to Allison for the fake thing. And then we find out, man, Tumbleton's been attacked. I mean, there's just this episode is loaded with content.
Yeah, dude. And the little music, like pick up whenever she's saying, I'll just burn them. But it's not that simple. It's not that simple. Is Rhaenyra going to descend into madness? Is that maybe?
Yeah. She doesn't have a Queen's Guard anymore. They're still looking for Aegon. This whole episode.
Sunfire is mentioned.
Yes.
A lot in the last two episodes. I thought that's very interesting.
And one of the other scenes we didn't talk about earlier is the scene, we briefly mentioned it, the scene with her and Alicent and Helaena,
mm-hmm.
where Alicent has that great line of like, so the only thing I can do is hope that my son is captured and killed.
Yeah, it's a pretty grim reality, and she's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I can do is hope that my son is captured and killed.
Yeah,
and but at the same time, I went back and started watching the scenes and like seasons one and two. And you're like, yeah, but Allison, you've also had a lot of like, it's easy to kind of view her as the victim a little bit right now, but it goes totally back and forth.
Yeah, everybody's kind of responsible for the shit show. There's nobody that's completely.
That's something I want to talk about. Who's the most responsible? I think I was thinking about that today. I was like, Viserys? I think you got to go even one bit. I think Jaehaerys the Great.
Easy, Matt. Easy.
I mean, had he cranked out a few more, had he cranked out some male heirs, wouldn't be in this situation.
Or just given it to Rhaenys, that would also.
I mean, could have. If you're anything like me, you've probably got a growing list of books you want to get through but never seem to find the time. That's why I've been using 11 Reader. Not only does it have over 200,000 premium audiobooks, but it lets you turn just about anything into a natural sounding audiobook. PDFs, articles, EPUBs, even documents you already have. One of my favorite features is being able to choose the narrator for anything I upload. It's amazing how much a different voice can completely change the immersion of a story. Sometimes the right narrator is the difference between a book you're just listening to and one you're completely pulled into. A gritty fantasy novel, a mystery, or even a history book can all feel completely different depending on who's telling the story. An 11 Reader gives you the freedom to find the voice that fits the book. It's become one of my favorite ways to catch up on reading while I'm driving, working out, or just taking the dog for a walk. Instead of watching another 20 minutes of social media, I actually make progress on my reading list. You can try 11 Reader for free, and if you decide to upgrade, use promo code PODCAST to get your first 2 months for just $1.
You know, I think maybe at the end of the show we could like divvy up blame and percentage points. I think that would actually be really fun.
You could say Rhaenyra for not choosing a male suitor earlier.
And having bastard children.
I mean, it didn't really, but even then, would it have really done? I mean, Otto Hightower and them were still gonna plan to do what they were gonna do.
Yeah, absolutely. It just helped their cause a good bit. Daemon's definitely at fault many times over. Aemon, I mean, the kids, right? Taking the eye. I mean, none of that helped.
Yeah.
None of that helped. I do think Viserys, if I had to pick, I'd actually pick Viserys, I think.
Had Viserys just chosen Daemon as his heir and let Rhaenyra marry him a lot earlier, then maybe there would have been no question.
Yeah, but putting Daemon on the throne is a scary prospect.
Well, he's on the throne now, ain't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he seems like he is not pleased with the Strongs being killed, which is kind of endearing. I really like that moment, but you can feel the tension building between Aemon and him, even miles and miles and miles away.
I haven't looked at our poll yet. I will go pull that up here.
I think last time I looked,
and then we'll dive into spoiler territory. We will dive into it here in a minute.
I think it's like 43% five star, which is our lowest of the season, but still pretty good. It's like heavy 4-5.
43%, 37% liked it, which is a higher combination of liked and loved than episode one was.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are definitely my three favorite episodes, like complete episodes. The Viserys walk is my favorite scene in the show so far. I would definitely put this as like my favorite three episode stretch, best beginning to a season. Like it's
Of House of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon. And but I will say, like, this run, this quality of run to me does feel reminiscent of some of our good days of Game of Thrones. So
yeah. Well, yes. As we're doing that on Patreon, by the way, just to give it a plug.
We're on a little break.
We'll probably get back to it maybe next week or the week after or something. But yeah. And we have started that. So okay, let's dive into some complete and utter spoiler territory.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Some big takeaways of this going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Again, spoilers. Is that this might be the thing that caused, for me, the first thing was this might be the thing that causes Helaena to jump. Is that she's in that room, right? Like, she's like, I don't want to stay in that room.
So you're sticking with the suicide.
Like blood and cheese. Yeah. I'm just saying, now that I've seen a little more, maybe that is. And she's like, it causes her to freak out because she really doesn't want to stay, you know, in that room. That
she's probably going to have more dreams too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I hope so. I hope we don't just drop that.
My other thought was, you know, maybe Allison kills her. Like,
holy shit.
Well, like the problem
or Rhaenyra.
Is that, well, the problem is that her death is the thing that causes the dragon pit to be stormed. But if it's like Allison thinking, because I remember like Cersei almost kills Tommen, right? Yeah. Because she thinks like, and she almost kills Sansa and say, hey, you better drink this poison if they come. Mm-hmm. But if you get into a situation like that where they legitimately think the city's going to be sacked and we're just going to be killed. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe I was thinking maybe that could be an angle that they play that they play in this whole thing.
Yeah. I have a question, and we're kind of in that room. So I feel like it's,
and I mean, like, cringe. I mean, right. It would be like Allison, like potentially killing Helaena. Yeah. I'm just,
right,
to try, like, right, to spare her or something. Yeah,
yeah. So here's a question: do you think Allison gets kind of relegated to the side a bit, or do you think we're going to see some major changes? Because I will say this: even though she's had prominent feature this season, I do think they're doing a pretty good job of just pushing her a little bit to the side.
If you read the books, once the war really starts and all this stuff, she is pushed to the side, and that's like the end of her story.
Yeah, so it has to change, right? Like, right?
Her story is going to be completely expanded upon, because in the books, she doesn't do anything. I mean, that's it. Like, essentially, that scene in season two, where everyone takes over and she's just like sitting there realizing, like, that's the end of her story. I mean, really, she doesn't do anything after that.
I do wonder, and I had this thought, because a lot of this show has been marketed as Allison and Rhaenyra. They are consistently in scenes together. Like, that's what we're supposed to take away. So part of me is like, Matt, is there a chance that like Rhaenyra and Allison die together?
I don't know.
It'd be kind of poetic.
Her ending, that's another thing, is that, like, after this, again, spoilers, as we're into spoilers, but I just want to say she just kind of like lives on, right? I mean,
she locked in a room or something.
Yeah, she like dies of a fever.
Classic.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's just kind of it. I mean, she like lives on, right? I mean, when does she die? She dies much later than this whole thing. I mean, she died 133, so a couple years after. But I mean, that's it. She may not survive I could see them making that a big change.
I could too. I think it's absolutely, I'm almost sure that they will definitely move her stuff around, give her more stuff to do. I just don't see it not being more, right?
Yeah.
Also, Tumbleton next week, what are you expecting?
Well, the big deal is, it's tough. Like, cause I'm thinking about how they might move some stuff around a little bit. They is like a lot of people flee. A lot of people, like, we get to this point where a lot of people want to flee, and then Rhaenyra locks them in the city. And so I like that might be moved around a little bit to where Rhaenyra just fed these people, but now she's locking them in. I think it's going to be a big difference with Ulf, and, or at least it's not necessarily a big difference, but they're just going to expand on it more. Because the books make it seem like Ulf and Hugh just get there and they're just like, all right, well, we're switching sides now. But Hugh, didn't he say his wife has fled to Tumbleton?
I think that you're right on track of what I think is about to happen.
And then they might do something where the dragons are like, they can't control them, because that's been a big, big part of the story.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, they're definitely turning. I think Ulf is also already kind of on, like, he's been just treated like shit. But I think Hugh turning is going to be a pretty powerful moment.
Yeah. I like that Ulf goes with him. He goes to the daemon. I'm just like, oh, that's gone. But some stuff does happen, because Tumbleton, I don't think is going to be, I don't think next episode is Tumbleton.
Yeah.
Wait, Butcher's Ball takes place before Tumbleton.
Wait, so you think next episode is not Tumbleton?
No, I think you can do some other stuff that's going on, because I think you have to get back to Aegon, and remember there's like Butcher's Ball that takes place. Oh,
so you're thinking this next episode is like almost like it ran beside what we just saw?
Right. Like remember how season one, the last two episodes were like the second to last episode was Green and Black. I think that's what they're going to do. Because now you have to get back to Aemon, and you have to get back to what's going on at Harrenhal.
There's a lot.
And have to kind of ramp Criston Cole back up to make us like remember who he is and why he's
important. More Hightower stuff for sure. Right.
Right. Before his event at Butcher's Ball takes place. So you have to get that going. So yeah, my guess is that this next episode will be a very Green, Aegon, Aemon, maybe some hallucination stuff at Harrenhal, but I think you got to go back to the other side. This episode was like completely Rhaenyra.
Yes. And so this is the weird thing, Matt, right? And I've kind of said like everyone just got to collectively get over the fact that the first two episodes were the end of season two and move on.
Right.
Sure. But there is a structural thing to this, because me and you, I asked this question to you in week two. Mid-season finale, that's next week. Do they have a mid-season finale, or
it could be episode five or six, it could be five. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be episode four. It could be episode five. But the same thing happened in season two, where we were mapping out the timeline. We're like, dude, season four might be like four episodes or something. There's just no way.
Oh, I think there's almost too much to do at this point.
Like, that's the thing. That's the thing, is every week we're just like, man, I don't know. How's it going to go? Like, is God's Eye going to be this week?
Look at it, I mean, God's Eye looks like
it's... It depends on how much they expand stuff out.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's still a lot of stuff with Aegon. You got to get Sunfire. You got to go to Harrenhal. The Harrenhal stuff is the big expansion. And before... then you get to Adam of Hall, and he goes to the Isle of the Green Men, because he's going around trying to recruit people, and he goes to the Isle, and they might big time expand on that.
We have seen little green men running around, which is... this show has definitely leaned into a lot of world ice and fire stuff. I love it so much. Here's a question for you then. So let's just say next week, mid-season finale. Let's just say.
Yeah.
Could you do Tumbleton and Butcher's Ball in the same episode?
I think it'd be crazy. So technically, right. So technically, if you look at like the bullet points, which of it, so you had Ball of King's Landing, which was last week / somewhat into
this week.
Then you technically have a few other battles. You have the Fish Feed, which is otherwise known as the Battle of the Lakeshore, which is like alongside the God's Eye. And it's supposed to be, it's actually supposed to be like the bloodiest, it's labeled as the bloodiest battle of the entire war.
Yeah.
Where you get back to Jason Lannister, and you get back to some of these other smaller houses, and like Dustin and the Freys, because the, the Tullys are getting ready to enter the war. They're neutral until about the middle of the war, and then they come in.
So could they blend the Red Fork Fish Feed with Tumbleton potentially, or do you think?
No, Tumbleton might be its first thing. And there's two battles at Tumbleton. The second one, right. The second one being like the second to last thing that even happens.
Yeah, it's right before Rhaenyra. Yeah.
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, so technically, before you even get to Tumbleton, there's the Battle of the Lakeshore, the Siege of Longtable, Sack of Bitterbridge, which some of these things can just be condensed down to like an episode opens with a battle, right? Mm-hmm. First Battle of Tumbleton, and then the Fall of Dragonstone, which might be the last episode of the season.
Because it's either God's Eye, bro.
I don't think so now. Because there's how many episodes left? So there's three. So there's
five, six, seven, eight. We have five episodes, and technically, the mid-season finale of season three would be episode six.
Right. If you want to play the timeline out like that.
Yeah. If you want to take two episodes off the front. Yeah.
Yeah. But can the Battle of the God's Eye open an episode? Open a season?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well, definitely. Because it's a cool thing. But what else is in the episode?
You're going to have a lot of expansion on Alice Rivers and stuff. Like, there's going to be a lot of expansion on that.
Right. Right.
And you could throw in some God's Eye stuff, like, you know, random other battles around the area. I mean, here's the thing.
Cause I think they may have to, she is the biggest wild card of the whole show and the most likely candidate to expand stuff out to connect it to Game of Thrones and A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms and any Song of Ice and Fire stuff you want to, because again, as we are in spoiler territory, her story doesn't even end. Her story does not end in Fire and Blood. We have no idea what happens to her, except that she is carrying a child and she's like labeled a witch and she has raised an army and that's it.
What if they did some silly shit?
No expansion after that.
Wouldn't it be silly if they like made her Melisandre or something?
I don't know, man. I mean,
I don't think it's going to happen.
She might be trying to take down the dragons. Damon did ask about her this episode.
Mm-hmm. He did. And I think their reunion will be pretty interesting. Here's a concern I have, Matt. Here's a concern. I'm a little concerned that they have all these episodes planned out because next season, you know, eight episodes. It's confirmed for another eight episodes. So if they stick to the episode number that they wrote for, there is a chance that the season finale of season three is also not really a quote unquote finale. Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, are they going to do the mid season in six? And then we just get these weird episodes, seven and eight, that are like kind of fallout setting up the finale. That's end up being season four's episode one and two. Is that what we're doing?
Maybe.
But then you're going to lose two episodes at the end, or technically it's like four episodes for what they were writing for. So like, I don't know. There's a lot of weirdness to this. What I will say is I think in theory, you could do Tumbleton with maybe some of the Red Kraken mood, just move some stuff around. And is there a chance that like Fall of Dragonstone and Butcher's Ball and.
Well, so, like season? I said, some of these battles will be. Like some of these things could be connected, like the storming of the Dragon Pit and the riots at King's Landing. It can be one thing. You can combine those. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, some of these other stuff, like some of the stuff that takes place on Dragonstone. I mean, you can speed that along. Like you don't have to hit every single mark of the story.
Oh, I just thought of something. There's also potential that some time is going to be spent with the Starks.
Yeah.
Like the Northern. By the way, Manderly.
Great.
Manderly in this episode.
That's what's his name from the Fantastic Beasts movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I forget his name in that movie, but yeah, he was in there. Hilarious. Yeah. So I mean some of the stuff you're gonna combine. And then a big one is I think it would be a huge mistake to not, and we've talked about this for the past couple of years, to not ramp up the Starks. Big time. Something. I mean, you need to make them seem as absolute. I mean, they did a little bit, but you need to make them seem as cool as possible.
Yeah. I think Craig and Stark will be pretty cool just based on the casting of it.
Right. Because this whole thing ends on a very depressing note, but the only way to upkeep it is actually the way the story goes. It's that the Starks are the ones who come in and kind of set everything straight at the very end.
Which is actually kind of an interest. Like if you watch this in timeline order, then you go to Game of Thrones and the Starks are being asked to come and fix things again. And then it goes very poorly.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a flip whenever you start Game of Thrones, which is kind of cool. So I don't know, man. I'm just wondering what they're going to move around.
I have not watched the preview, nor will I. I don't watch the previews. I just watch the episode.
No, not watching preview. So I guess that sucks for people who did, because they're gonna be like, "You idiots! We already know." But I just feel like there's a chance that they end up doing a midseason.
They might. But I'll tell you the other thing is that you've introduced Ormond Hightower, and you need to give him an episode or two to grow.
He's got to be featured next episode.
He dies. So you can't just have him like die. Like,
well, you can
make him seem cool and then just kill him off.
They did it to Crab Feeder.
Yeah. But I mean, Crab Feeder is like a tool to progress the story.
Watch what you say next, Matt. Okay.
He's an actual character, but you need to give him, if you give him two episodes, then it's totally, you know.
Well, I did honestly.
But I don't think we're getting God's Eye this season. Now we're like a little bit closer. I mean, unless next episode drastically changes my opinion, I'd push it to I'd push it to episode 4.
Well, here's the thing.
Season 4.
And I've seen some people comment on our stuff saying this, and I actually agree. I think it's a really good chance they want Matt Smith for season 4 promotion materials.
Right.
Matt Smith's the biggest star of the show at this point, I would say. So.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and not having him for season 4 promotional things is probably a bad move business-wise.
I mean, that the God's Eye battle could be completely moved. Structurally too, though, it kind of just happens, and the rest could completely happen whether those guys are alive or not.
Well, Rhaenyra's stuff's getting moved, in our opinion, right? Like, they're going to push that off.
Yeah.
Because it would happen at the beginning of, like, episode 2 or 3. There's no chance, dude.
There's no chance. I mean...
I don't know, man. That'd be a brave decision. I'll give them that.
Like, minimum... I think she makes it all the way to episode 6 of season 4.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, technically, if you look at it, there's, like, stuff that happens... there's quite a bit that still takes place after that.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, though, maybe they do, and maybe we start seeing a shifting away, kind of like what's happened to Allison. Like, she's kind of shifted into the sidecar. Mm-hmm. Maybe Rhaenyra starts shifting into the sidecar a little bit. I do think the show has done a good job of making everyone seem like a main character at some point or another. Like Aegon, I missed him this episode. It's like, where is he? What's he up to? Where's Sunfire?
And I will say that I'm still concerned, but again, I mean, we've got a little bit before it happens because it's probably going to be next season. Still a little concerned about the lack of a character who could be the shepherd.
Oh, give that time. Give that time. You know who I think is going to do all this?
Yeah.
Missaria.
I know.
It's Missaria. I'm okay with that.
I am too, as long as it works out and plays.
As long as she doesn't talk.
Her accent's way better than it was season 1.
Oh, it's better, but I still don't really care for it. I like the actress plenty. She's fine.
Yeah.
But her and Daemon got a lot going on between them. There has to be some sort of resolution there, right? Well, think about this. Actually, now I'm thinking about it. He was on his Valyrian purity thing, right? World conquering, dragons, dragons, dragons. If she goes to be the shepherd, could she not just lead the storming of the dragon pit and get rid of those dragons?
That's who does, essentially, yeah.
You could ultimately have her go after, like, she could be motivated by her desire to hurt Daemon.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We have to see. We have to see more. But, I mean... Well, no, I feel like after next episode, I think we'll really be able to pinpoint it. Certainly the gods.
I think we said that last week, though.
But I mean, now I feel way more confident, because last week I was like, well, I don't know, man. We really do see this next episode. But I really do feel like after next week, we'll be able to definitively say whether God's Eye is this season or not.
Yeah.
After episode 8, we'll really be able to know if God's Eye was in this season or not.
Let me give you just a scenario here. Okay. God's Eye happens at the end of this season. Mm-hmm. In episode 1, we see Damon. Like, he survives.
And
you know what I mean? And then we get this little side story with him going to be the three-eyed raven. I mean, I'm going out there right now, but just saying, that would be a holy shit moment.
Yeah. We'll see.
So right. Your official prediction for next week is that we don't get Tumbleton and it's a Greens episode. Okay.
I think it is a Greens episode and it will be Amond heavy. I mean, we'll probably get a little bit of you know, Rhaenyra and what's going on there. But I feel like you have to turn back to the Greens.
Yeah. And now I'm thinking about it, like, we've never been big on, or not we, but like, this universe has never been big on the final episode being the biggest climax. Usually the most dramatic physical consequences come the episode prior, right?
Right.
So if you think about Butcher's Ball being episode 7, I would agree. I don't think there's any way the God's Eye is this season then.
I think next episode you have to do, we're probably like Kristen Cole. Mm-hmm. You have to do Amon, and I think would Harrenhal. You have to do more Harrenhal stuff.
So 5 becomes Tumbleton, 6 is the fall of Tumbleton, 7 Butcher's Ball, 8 fall of Dragonstone, fallout from Butcher's. Is that where we're on? Okay, I like that. I can sign my name to that.
Yeah.
I will say I wouldn't be surprised if we got Tumbleton next week, but I think you are correct.
Well, Ormond Hightower, it seems like they are they've really built him up into something, and you can't just kill him off. Like,
oh, he did a baller move. Like, definitely one of the better twists.
Yeah, I think because he goes and raises an army, and you gotta build him up more.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I can't really say it enough. That moment of the episode got me good. I had a moment though, Matt, where I was like, is Allison playing the double cross here, where she pretends it's not Darren, and it is? I had that.
What if she just said it was?
Yes, I could see someone being like, "Why didn't Allison give it away?" But like in that moment, I don't think you could hide that emotion. Like, she's so distressed. Also, like, I think Allison, as far as like as a human being, is just kind of spent. Like, she had her moment. She's done with it all. She just wants it to end. So I don't think she has the wherewithal right now to play the Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Cause when we real quick, and we'll end up here, but cause you got it. I mean, Kristen Cole's been way too big of a player to, like, that's the thing, is you can't have Tumbleton be next week. And then like, is Kristen Cole just gone in the opening scene? Like, oh, Butcher, you have to have Butcher's Ball before that. I mean, that's its own episode for sure.
Yeah, Butcher's Ball definitely needs to be, and I will say I think that he does need a significant amount in an episode for that.
Because he was like the huge villain of season 1 and 2. I mean, he was.
Yeah,
he's.
We've also waited 4 years since those moments.
But it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think binging, people will feel it no matter what, because they'll watch it back to back to back. But us waiting 4 years, it feels like I haven't seen Kristen Cole in a monumental scene in a long time.
Yeah.
So,
okay. That's a good, okay place to stop, or we'll just keep rambling forever.
Great episode though. I mean, look how much we had to talk about, and you know, we missed stuff. So,
oh yeah, there was so much more to it, but yes. So next week it'll be the same thing. I definitely won't be able to do a live stream next week. But I think maybe the finale, we'll see, but it's just, I like this more too. That way I'm not like managing.
Yeah. I get to collect my thoughts reactions a little bit more.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, with that, guys, as always, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. And remember that winter is coming.